Hello, my name is Ben Burrell, and welcome back to Bob Dylan Album by Album, a podcast that takes an in-depth look at each Bob Dylan studio recording, record by record. Welcome to episode 3 of season 3, and thank you to everyone that has supported the podcast in the last week. Hi to Steve Trice and David and Anonymous Mysterious. Hi to Amit as well, and hello to Nikki Garcia. It's more than appreciated. You can literally buy me a coffee on a website called Buy Me a Coffee if you want to support the podcast, if you're a regular listener, because as I mentioned before, the podcast is pretty much fueled by coffee. I do end up buying a lot whilst writing and mixing the episodes. And also, you are contributing to hosting fees as well. It costs about like $10, 20 quid a month to host the podcast, which I don't mind being out of pocket for. But literally, thanks to your kind donations, you've pretty much paid for the next couple of months of hosting. So thank you very, very much. If you want to get involved, there's a link to my Buy Me a Coffee page in this episode's description. And some people were saying they had some problems with using PayPal on the Buy Me a Coffee website. If that is the case, then I've also put a link to my PayPal me again in the episode description of this episode. Have a little look when you get 5 minutes. So on with today's album, and I guess we're looking at another transitional record. This is 1993's World Gone Wrong.
Oh, there was a wealthy merchant in London, he did dwell. He had a lovely daughter, the truth he will tell.
It's 1993 and America is still gripped by grunge, whilst the UK is just about to go Britpop mad. Both of Dylan's former stomping grounds are home to genres and artists not really in sync with our folk hero. It's not been the easiest time for Bob either. He spent the better part of the previous decade trying to work out what he wanted to be. He tried to fit in with a contemporary 80s sound with albums like Empire Burlesque and Infidels. He also tried to diversify with Oh Mercy to brilliant effect. I promise one day on this podcast I'll stop telling you how good that album is. After that, he enlisted the help of his friends with the celebrity cameo-heavy and sloppy Under the Red Sky. Then Dylan issues Good As I Been to You, which is a collection of traditional folk songs and covers, and that's pretty much what we get on this album. However, World Gone Wrong is definitely the better of the two. Here he goes back to basics with the thing he started his career doing. It's folk songs in a very straightforward way. It's a move that both reminds everyone of what Dylan is all about, but also it's quite an easy album to make too, and that's important. Both these cover LPs were issued to fulfil terms of his January 1988 Sony contract. It would be the final album released under that deal, although Dylan would re-sign with Sony at the end of 1993 for another 10 albums. Just for the timeline in your head, he would then take 4 years out before recording his next studio album, Time Out of Mind, which, as we know, would go on to relaunch his career. At this point, Bob was clearly disillusioned with the record industry. It's even fair to say he'd lost interest. Because of this, and just like the last two records we've looked at on this season of the podcast, World Gone Wrong is a transitional album. Another side of Bob Dylan bridged the gap between the protest period and the electric one, and Together Through Life had the difficult job of moving us on out of Dylan's purple patch of that classic latter-day trio. This album comes just before that, and you really feel Dylan had to make an album like this to clear the way for those three brilliant albums. On the face of it, the omens aren't good. I mean, a covers album, in fact, a covers album issued to finish off a contract from an artist not producing his best work is not the basis for a good record. But this isn't a write-off. It's actually quite good. There's good songs here. And the album starts with one of its best, the opening track and title song.
Strange things have happened that never before. My baby told me I would have to go.
Bob's voice sounds great here. We're right in the sweet spot of it sounding mature, which complements the songs, without it sounding like it's battered with touring and age. The song itself is a traditional folk tune that was first released by the Mississippi Shakes in 1932.
I can't be good no more, once like I did before. I can't be good, baby, honey, because the world's gone wrong.
B.B. King also covered this song for his 2008 and final studio album, One Kind Favor. Unsurprisingly, it sounds very B.B. King-like.
I can't be good no more, baby. Honey, because the world is going wrong.
Just like the performances in those two versions, Dylan plays to his strengths when covering the song. It's done in an early Dylan style. You can be forgiven for thinking Bob had set up a microphone in a Greenwich Village cafe. He's really going back to his roots, singing the song that he must have sung 1,000 times. Bob's approach really brings out the best of the song. Whilst the two versions we heard there are wonderful takes, neither highlight the big and constant chord shift throughout. With the guitar, Dylan, like the other versions, moves from C sus 4 to C, which are quite pleasant sounding chords. He then shifts to the D minor 7 sharp 5 shape, going from this to this. This is a sharp twist that really adds depth to that lyric of I can't be good no more, almost like the knife is being stuck in with that chord shift as he sings those lines, bringing out the pain in them brilliantly. Of course, this is not down to Bob, he's merely following the tune, but whether intentional or not, the production, or even lack of it, in Dylan's version really highlights this steep shift in notes and glorifies it. Listen to how stark the shift is compared to the B.B. King version.
I can't be good no more, like I wanted before.
But I have to go, I can't be good no more, once like I did before.
Of course, it's there in the B.B. King version and pretty much every other version, but Dylan's is like ice water in the face. It demands to be noticed. This and pretty much every song on the record are very intimate sounding. In fact, it doesn't sound like he's even in a studio, and he sort of isn't, although we'll get to that later. It sounds like we're getting a glimpse into Bob just mucking around. He's covering some tunes in his downtime, he's alone, and he's just amusing himself. And that is the major strength of this album. We're hearing a generation-defining musician doing what he does best. There's a certain joy in that. It also means we hear from a much looser Bob. He seems to be more settled sounding. The no-frills production approach means that he's not trying to prove anything here. The pressure of making a Bob Dylan album has gone. This is just a basic covers album. It's not trying to be the next Blonde on Blonde. On other records in this era, like Under the Red Sky, for example, and the Grateful Dead album, you feel Dylan was trying to capture something. A decent follow-up to Oh Mercy, perhaps, or an album to relaunch his career, but here he's given up in the best possible way. It's just a man doing what he wants to do. On the second track, Love Henry, it sounds like Bob is staring off into the middle distance, strumming his way through this traditional folk song on a lazy Sunday afternoon. The playing's even a little bit lackluster.
Get down, love Henry, she cried, and stay all night with me.
The song, which is also known as Young Hunting or even Henry Lee, dates back to the 18th century, apparently from Scotland. It tells the story of a scorned woman whose lover has made her pregnant, then tells her he is in fact in love with someone else, a more beautiful woman. The first verse is from the woman's point of view, as Bob sings, get down, love Henry, she cried, and stay all night with me. I have gold chains, and the finest I have, I'll apply them all to thee. Which is a slight alteration from the original lines of get down, little Henry Lee, and stay all night with me. You won't find a girl in this damn world that will compare with me. In the next verse, we hear the man telling her about the new love as Bob sings, I can't get down and I shan't get down or stay all night with thee. Some pretty little girl in Cornsville, I love her far better than thee. Again, this is another slight departure from the original lyrics, but the meaning is pretty much the same.
I can't get down and I shan't get down, I'll stay all night with thee. Some pretty little girl in Cornsville, I love far better than me.
Again, here it sounds like we're getting a glimpse into a Dylan rehearsal session. These are the sort of takes you'd expect from a warm-up session before a show. It's just Dylan on a guitar solo strumming through some of his favourite songs that have influenced his career, not a man recording an LP in a studio. Although, like I said, he's not really in a studio. Sessions for the album were held in Dylan's Malibu home in his garage in May 1993. It was recorded solo in a matter of days, with 15 songs in contention for the final album, 14 of which were recorded without a single change of guitar strings. Five songs didn't make the cut. Goodnight My Love, 21 Years, Mary and the Soldier, and Robert Johnson's 3220 Blues, and the Carter Family's Hello Stranger, all don't appear. However, both 3220 Blues and Mary and the Soldier did make the cut elsewhere, turning up on the bootleg series Volume 8, Telltale Signs.
Well, I said for my baby, man, and she don't come. Said for my baby, man, and she don't come.
With this garage recording space, there's obviously a DIY feel to the record that is in part endearing and in part throwaway. More than once, distortion creeps into the song's recordings. Given that the only instrument is the guitar and sometimes the harmonica, it would appear the recording setup was pretty rudimentary. Listen to the audio peak on track 3. This isn't the only time this happens on the record. In fact, it's pretty rough and ready, and that's probably down to the album's lineup. The production team is small, to say the least. Dylan is listed as the producer, with recording and mixing done by McKay Orion, and mastering was outsourced to a famous mastering house in LA called Precision Mastering. Apart from the design and photo credits, that's pretty much it for the album, a crew of three. The DIY theme of the record continues to that cover art. It's a photo of a top-hatted Dylan at Flute's Cradle Cafe Bar in Camden Town in London. If you're wondering, the picture on the wall behind him is a painting called Let a Stranger by artist Peter Gallagher. It's fine, but it looks more like an image from a glossy Dylan photo book rather than an album cover. Adding to this, he also writes the liner notes for the record too. Although this was probably due to some legal complications with the previous record, which saw some inaccurate song credits and featured legal action from Australian folk singer Mick Slocum, who sued Dylan's music publisher over an arrangement credit in a track called Jim Jones. These liner notes are fascinating. Bob outlines each song, and it's a great read. It might be the best thing he wrote in the first half of the 90s. If you've not read them, it's more than worth a look. It's kind of mysteriously brilliant. For example, he says about the title track, World Gone Wrong, "This goes against cultural policy. Strange things are happening like never before. Strange things, all right. Strange things like courage becoming befuddled and non-fundamental. Evil charlatans masquerading in pullover vests and tuxedos talking gobbledygook." They're all like that. They're all a little bit off the wall. Of course, this is Bob we're talking about. He's never going to write a straightforward liner note like, "I like this song and I thought it'd be nice to include it here" type of thing. He's definitely going to dress it up, and he does more than that here. Apart from these song descriptions, we also get an insight to his headspace. He talks about the never-ending tour, for example, saying, "By the way, don't be bewildered by the never-ending tour chatter. There was a never-ending tour, but it ended in 91 with the departure of guitarist G.E. Smith." He then goes on to list other tours that he gave names to, like, for example, the Money Never Runs Out tour, fall of 91, the Southern Sympathizer tour, early 92, Why Do You Look at Me So Strangely tour in Europe, 92, and so on and so on and so on. I'm mentioning this because he's let the veil slip for a moment in a very un-Dylan way. That tour passage in particular feels like a little bitter aside to the music commentators, echoing that disillusionment with the industry I mentioned before. Back onto the songs, and he says of album closer Lone Pilgrim, "This is from an old Doc Wilson record. What attracts me to the song is how the lunacy of trying to fool the self is set aside at any given point. Salvation and the need for mankind are more prominent." That ever so slightly shifting tempo and the easy transition from strumming to picking chords reminds me of another album closer, Restless Farewell. And just like in that tune, this is a goodbye. In fact, on the final verse, Bob sings, "Go tell my companion and children most dear to not weep for me now I'm gone. The same hand that led me through the seas most severe has kindly assisted me home.
Go tell my companion and children most dear to weep not for me now I'm gone. The same hand that led me through scenes most severe has kindly assisted me home."
It's a song about leaving, a song about death. Like Dylan said, it tackles some big themes. Salvation is amongst them. It might not have been a conscious thing, but Dylan feels like he's using the words of another to shed his skin here. He's saying goodbye and moving on to the next stage of his career, and that's what this album and indeed this interim period was all about. He's signing off his contract, he's fulfilling an era, he's preparing himself for a rebirth 4 years later with Time Out of Mind. And that's the very thing that stops this album from being great. It is a transitional record, but unlike the other records of this nature, it's not exciting or daring, it's not trying to do something new, it's just a process to get through. If the next records are an exciting adventure, then this is definitely the plane ride over. By the time you get to Jack O' Roe or Two Soldiers, you're feeling a little bit of folk fatigue. On their own, they're nice little recordings of some fantastic songs, but after you've gone through almost half an hour of tunes like this, the effect starts to wear off. To be fair, Dylan does try to diversify it a little bit. Broken Down Engine isn't a traditional folk song, but a Blind Willie McTell cover. It was first recorded and released by Blind Sammy in 1931. It's more bluesy than others here, and again, Dylan's voice is in fine form.
Lordy, 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 Lordy.
In the liner notes, Bob says this is about trains and mystery on the rails and the train of love, the train that carried my girl from town. And he's right, it's a classic travelling song that Dylan really does do justice. However, the elementary sonics stop it from being a big enough shift to add a little bit of spice to the album. There is another cover that's not a traditional folk song on the album, and that is track 3, Ragged and Dirty.
Lord, I'm broke, I'm hungry, ragged and dirty too.
As Bob says in the liner notes, one of the Willie Browns did this. He's referring to the obscure William Brown of Sadie Beck's plantation in Arkansas, who recorded it under his own name for the Library of Congress on July 16, 1942. Whilst I said it's not a traditional folk song, it sort of is. This song is a much older tune than the William Brown version. In fact, it appeared on record under the title Broken Hungry or similar, recorded by Blind Lemon Jefferson in Chicago in November 1926. But Bob seems to be channeling the Willie Brown version as opposed to the others, even if he mucks around with the lyrics a little bit. So just to review after a quite confusing passage, it's Bob's cover of a traditional folk tune. If you know what I mean. I love the end of Dylan's version. It reminds us of the fact that this is Bob recording these songs on his own. It finishes like he just cuts it short, like this was just a rehearsal. But it's a lovely moment of the song slowing and then coming to a stop. This again feels like we're witnessing a little special private Dylan moment. It's a really nice, poignant moment as Bob plucks some random notes at the end of the tune. And more poignant moments are where this record really shines. With a Bob solo album, we want him to knock us out with some magic. We want him crooning over soft acoustic guitar chords. We want wistful lyrics where he uses his lower register. We want Bob doing what Bob does best. And that's exactly what we get on track 4, Blood in My Eyes.
Woke up this morning, feeling blue.
This is another song recorded by the Mississippi Shakes, and Bob once again sums up his thoughts on it in the liner notes, saying, "Rebellion against routine seems to be their strong theme." Whilst not issued as a proper single, it does get a video, which features Bob walking around Camden in London, signing autographs and having his photo taken. He's striding about with a cane and that top hat from the cover art. In fact, he ends up in the bar from the front cover in a pose from the photograph. This is then intercut with Dylan lip-syncing along to the song. Whilst Bob is definitely fed up with the music industry, it appears he still cares about his career. He was never really one for big promotion, especially not in the latter stages of his career, but making a video that he's actually involved in suggests he wanted this album to be some sort of a success, which again feels like we're moving out of the doldrums from the previous records, ready for that impending comeback. The lyrics of the tune, on the face of it, suggest a fight or altercation with that repeated line of "I've got blood in my eyes for you," like our narrator has fought to win the object of his desire. But actually, that turns out not to be the case. The first verse is classic lyrics about unrequited love, as he sings, "Woke up this morning feeling blue, seen a good-looking girl, can I make love with you? Hey babe, I've got blood in my eyes for you." We then find out a little more on the next verse as Dylan sings, "I went back home, put on my tie, gonna get that girl that money will buy."
I went back home, put on my tie, gonna get that girl that money will buy. Hey, hey, babe, I got blood in my eyes.
That line about money suggests our narrator has become infatuated with a prostitute, and with that comes a shift in the meaning of the titular lines. Blood in my eyes takes on a whole new meaning of want. In the same way that we blush or get a rush of blood to the head, here our narrator is telling us that he's got desire-filled eyes. I've got blood in my eyes for you. It's like saying he can't take his eyes off her. It's an obsession. The blood has rushed to them. Things get a little more manic as the song goes on, with repeated references to our narrator being made to wait and finding it difficult. Then we hear things turning sour as Bob sings, "You got my money, now you're trying to break this date." In the final verse, our narrator is spurned, probably because of his own behaviour, but he is still intoxicated with the call girl as Dylan sings, "I tell you something, I tell you facts. You don't want me, give my money back.
I tell you something, tell you the facts. You don't want me, give my money back.
This song recalls another Dylan track for me, and that's Dark Eyes, the closing track from Empire Burlesque. There, Dylan is once again addressing a prostitute.
And all I see are dark eyes.
The story is he stumbled across a cool girl in the lobby of New York's Plaza Hotel late one night. She had blue circles around her eyes and black eyeliner and dark eyes, he wrote in 2004's Chronicles. She looked like she'd been beaten up and was afraid she'd get beaten up again. Whilst the subject matter of those songs are similar, the tone and sonics are also partnered too.
Hey, babe, I got blood in my eyes for you.
Interestingly, listening back to the Mississippi Shakes version reveals a big Dylan influence. Of course, he's influenced by the band's music, he's covered them twice here, but more specifically, it appears he's influenced in a broader sense by Walter Vinson's vocals and the way he slides up on the notes during his delivery. Listen to the way Vinson uses his voice, it's very Dylan-like, or in actual fact, it's the other way around.
Hey, baby, I've got blood in my eyes for you. I've got blood in my eyes for you, baby. I don't care what in this world you do.
Whilst this record might not be the most rewarding in terms of new music from Dylan, it is interesting to get an insight into the music that inspired him, much more so than just Bob mentioning songs in interviews that he likes. It's interesting to hear him engage with these songs that shaped his career. It's not a run-of-the-mill covers album with obvious song choices trotted out to keep the fans happy between albums. It's more than that. Despite the positives, it's hardly an album that gets the pulse racing. It's nice to sit down with once a year and spend some time in the company of Bob gamefully strumming through some of his favourite songs in his garage, but it gets less fun on repeated listens. It doesn't quite have the depth for it to cross over into greatness. If it was a more full-sounded approach, say, with some nifty little musical moments breathing new life into these compositions, then maybe the record would have made a bigger dent in the consciousness of Dylan's discography. Critics friendly to Bob would review it pretty well, but others weren't so keen, and you can see why. The public even less so. The LP limps to 70 in the US charts and 35 in the UK. At the time, I'm sure it was seen as another average album from a spent force. However, with hindsight, it's just a nice little interlude in Bob's career. That's it for our look at World Gone Wrong. Let me know your thoughts on this album, please, because I changed my opinion of it whilst writing this episode. When I first started to write, I was not a fan of it at all. And I think that's because it's an album that you don't particularly revisit too much. I must have listened to it for the first time about 10, 15 years ago, and I haven't really been back to it too many times since then. But actually, spending a lot of time with it recently, sort of spending 3 weeks listening almost daily, has rekindled my love for it, and I actually really, really enjoyed it. So share your thoughts on this album, please. You can find the podcast on Twitter and Instagram, at Bob Dylan Podcast, and you can find me at Ben Burrell on Twitter and at Benjamin Burrell on Instagram. Next week, we're not looking at an album. We're doing a special, and we're looking at the incredible song, Positively 4th Street. So join me then for that. In the meantime, thank you for listening, and goodbye.